Good morning, church. Good morning, guests and new friends. And happy new year to you. If you're with us here, turn to Hebrews chapter 12. We're looking at the first few verses here in Hebrews chapter 12. And I don't know if you have any New Year's resolutions or goals, or maybe already have some that have already come and gone, that's okay. But if you don't, and if you do, I would like you to consider running in 2024. Now, I know what most of you are thinking is not a chance. There is no chance that I am running in 2024. I didn't run in 2023. I didn't run in 2022. I'm not going to run this year. But I want you to know, I'm not talking about running shoes or sidewalks or tracks. I'm not talking about signing up for a half marathon or even a 5K this year. I'm talking about running a race that you're already signed up for. If you're a follower of Jesus this morning, you need to know that you are in a race. You're already in a race. You're a runner. You're in the race of faith. And so really the question for 2024 is not, Christian, will you run? But really, will you run well? Will you run well this year? How will you run? Will you run well? Will you endure? That's what our passage is about this morning. Here we're going to find the encouragement, the instruction, and the motivation that we need to run and to run well and to keep running this year and beyond, all the way to the end. Now, this letter was written to believers who were really run-down runners. This letter was written to believers who were not running so well. Some of them were hardly running at all. If you go back and read Hebrews chapter 10, you'll see that these believers had started out well in this race of faith, but the race of following Jesus had become hard. It had become more difficult. The race seemed to continually go uphill in hardship, and the course seemed to be scorched with the sun of suffering and persecution. And there seemed to be so much comfort and peace and rest offered in other places that these runners are tempted to slow down, to stop, or to even turn back away from Jesus, to drop out of the race completely. So as we come to Hebrews chapter 12 and verses 1 and 2, they're going to read like a running coach, encouraging and instructing and motivating these runners to keep going. The theme of Hebrews chapter 12 is endurance. If the theme, maybe you know, of Hebrews chapter 11 is faith and running in faith, well, the emphasis, the theme of Hebrews chapter 12 is to run with endurance. Look with me, Hebrews chapter 12, verses 1 and 2. Therefore, since we are surrounded by so great a cloud of witnesses, let us lay aside every weight and sin which clings so closely, and let us run with endurance the race that is set before us, looking to Jesus, the founder and perfecter of our faith, who for the joy that was set before him endured the cross, despising the shame, and is seated at the right hand of the throne of God. Amen. One of our highlights of this past year was elementary cross-country meets. If you've not attended an elementary cross-country meet here in Knox County, you need to do that. If you can find a place to park, it is worth it. There's nothing quite like seeing, seems like, hundreds of elementary students running across a field, stampeding across a field. In one of our last races, our third grader was running, and it was his last race of the year. He was at Victor Ash, And Victor Ash, the park kind of sets up nicely because you can follow along your runner. And so I decided I'm going to help Oliver run his best race of the year. So here he comes with dozens, hundreds of elementary boys running, and I'm right there along with him. I can see him the whole time, and I'm running right alongside of him. And I'm saying, Oliver, you can do it. You're doing great. You're doing great. And he's coming up one of the hills. He's about halfway in. It's a long stretch. It's a long hill coming back up. One of the only hills in the race, but it's a long hill. And I'm saying, you can do it. Don't stop. Don't stop. And he's wheezing and looking at me. He's got some allergies, some breathing issues. And he's looking at me, Dad, I got to stop. I got to stop. And I said, all right, 5 seconds. You can walk for 5 seconds. And he hits a walk. And I say, all right, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. All right, now run again. And sure enough, he takes off. And he crested the hill, and he runs the home stretch. And that's when I read Hebrews chapter 12, verses 1 and 2. That's what the writer of Hebrews is like. He's like a coach, a parent, an instructor, a mentor coming alongside you and saying, you can do it. Don't stop. I know it hurts. I know it hurts, but you're almost there. You're almost at the top of the hill. Look how far you've come. Boy, don't stop. Don't stop yet. You're almost there. You can do it. So if you're a run-down runner this morning, maybe in your Christian walk, if you feel tired, if you feel discouraged heading into a new year, that's the thing about New Year's, is they're not that new, right? You bring the weariness sometimes of last year. You bring some of the hardship and the hurts. You bring some of the baggage from last year. You're not starting to stretch. We're really fresh. We're really right in the middle of a race, right? And so this coach comes alongside you if you're discouraged, or maybe even if you're distracted and you would admit, I'm just slowing down in the Christian walk. And he comes alongside of us and says, don't stop. You can do it. You can do it. Don't stop. Don't give up. Keep going. Keep enduring with Christ. So how does he coach us here? How can you keep going in 2024? How can you run better this year than you did in the past? What do we need? Well, first of all, our running coach, the writer of Hebrews, says we need encouragement. Or you could say we need to run inspired. We need encouragement. That's the way he starts in verse 1. He says, therefore, since we are surrounded by so great a cloud of witnesses. Right? We need encouragement and inspiration if we're going to run well. And the writer of Hebrews, to encourage us in the race, gives us this imagery of us stepping out onto the track or onto the course. And it's like he throws on the stadium lights. And as he does, we look in the grandstands. And that's obviously the picture, the imagery that he's picking up on. It's this metaphor of a stadium full of people. He calls them a cloud of witnesses. And it's not that they're in the clouds. It's a group that's so large that they spread out and they fade into the clouds. It's just a cloud, a sea. We might say a sea of people. And we look up as we run this race and we see the stadium filled with more people than we can count, a sea of witnesses. Now, who is this sea? Who is this cloud of witnesses? Well, the therefore here in verse 1 connects us to Hebrews chapter 11. The cloud of witnesses are the Old Testament saints that we have been reintroduced to in Hebrews 11. They're people like Abel and Noah and Abraham and Sarah and David and Gideon and many, many more. Many, we're told, that are unknown to us. They're unnamed. All the folks that have run before us are in the stadium, filling the stadium, cheering us on to encourage us, to inspire us. But how do they inspire us? How do they encourage us? The writer calls them witnesses, but there's two ways that someone can be a witness, right? We could think, you might think that they're witnesses in the fact that they're looking down from heaven and they're witnessing our race. But there's another sense that they could be witnesses here as well. A witness could either watch or a witness might testify, right? They might testify. And I think the sense here is not that they are watching us run, but that as we run, we look back to their races and how they ran. And the races that they have run and the lives that they have lived testify to us. They witness to us. They are to encourage us and inspire us. They ran well, and so can we. That's the message. They ran well. They did it, and so can you. Right? If you look back at Hebrews chapter 11, you find that this sea of witnesses, this cloud of runners that have gone before, they also ran difficult courses. All these folks ran difficult courses. Right? If you look up into the stands, you look up through the scriptures, you realize we're not the first to run tough stretches of a course. We're not the first ones to run uphill. We're not the first ones to face the scorching heat of obstacles and suffering and persecution and hardships. God's people have always run tough races, and they have always faced daunting, seemingly insurmountable obstacles. So you go back and look at Hebrews chapter 11, you see, wow, Abel, wow, there's a runner. He faced the envy and retribution from his brother. Noah ran a race of endurance. He ran the course of rejection. Everybody around him rejected him. The whole world was against him. Abraham, his life testifies of a difficult course. He was asked to follow when he didn't know where he was going. God called him to run a race and didn't exactly tell him where he was going. Sarah, she ran a difficult course. She had to believe that God would come through on his promise when all hope seemed lost. Moses had all the comforts and all the pleasures dangled in front of him as he ran. Everything in Moses' path said, turn aside, go another way, seek the comfort and ease of this world. And we're told still others were mistreated, mocked, imprisoned, tortured, and killed. As we look up into this stadium full of witnesses, their lives testify. We too ran a difficult course, and we made it. We endured, and you can do it too. They ran a difficult course. They also had to run the same way we run. They ran a difficult course, and they also had to run by faith. They ran the same kind of course that we run in the same way we're called to run it. They run it by faith. Well, you might think, well, they ran it so well because their names are Noah and Abraham and Sarah and David, right? And then isn't that a little bit like saying, well, hey, Usain Bolt ran the 200, so can you. Kipchoge ran the marathon, world record holder, so can you. But that's not what we see in Hebrews chapter 11. We find people that are just like us, people that didn't run in their own strength. Again and again, we see 18 times by my count that all of these ran in one way, not by their own strength, but by faith. We're told that they ran by faith. Now, what does it mean to live by or run by faith? What is faith? Faith is trusting who God is and what he has said enough to follow him no matter what. Faith is trusting who God is and what he has said enough to follow and obey him no matter what. That's what you find in Hebrews chapter 11. These folks ran the race the same way we have to run our race, by faith. And so the message is not just, hey, they did it and so can you. The message is really, God did it for them. God will do it for you. God came through for them. God will come through for you. You can trust his promises. You can follow him into the unknown. You can follow him when the course and the race is tough. You can keep going when you want to quit, not because you have it in you any more than Abraham had it in him, but because of who God is. They ran the same course, the same way, a difficult course by faith. You need their encouragement. That's why we take our Bibles and read through the Old Testament. That's why we take our Bibles and read of Old Testament and New Testament believers to see that as they trusted God, God helped them endure. You need encouragement. He also says you need freedom. If you're going to run well in 24, you're going to have to run in freedom. He says, lay aside every weight and sin which clings so closely. Right? It's not enough to be inspired. Right? Later on this summer, all of us will sit on our couch and we will be inspired as we watch the Olympics. We'll be moved. We'll be in awe. And most of us will sit on our couch and be awed, right? Inspiration is good. Encouragement is good, but it takes more than inspiration. And the coach hears in Hebrew says that if we're going to run well, you're going to have to run free. You're going to have to run free. Now, it's quite well known that the Olympian runners at this time ran quite free indeed, right? Really free, like totally free. Nothing hindering them. It's obvious that the writer here picks up on that and says that if we're going to run free, run Christian, if we're going to run well and keep running well, we're going to have to put off everything that weighs us down or trips us up. Think about those two categories that he names. He says, lay aside what weighs us down. Right? Every weight. Lay aside every weight. The word there is just stuff that is cumbersome. Interestingly, the word, the original Greek word here was used to literally refer to like extra weight, body weight that an athlete might be carrying that would have to come off during the training. But here, of course, it's more general than that. It's anything that makes running the Christian race more difficult. Right? Running is already difficult enough, right? It doesn't make a lot of sense to carry extra weight. Runners want to streamline and lighten the load. I was looking up some of the newest, hottest running shoes. Nike just released the Vaporfly 3. The shoes weigh barely 6 or 7 ounces. That's going to cost you about $50 an ounce, but that's how prized these shoes are, because running requires that we run lightly. Christian, we too are to run light. Right? If runners for a medal or for a certificate or for a bucket list work to shed every pound, even every ounce, surely in our pursuit of Christ, we must strip off, lay aside anything that hinders us and weighs us down. It's interesting that the writer of Hebrews seems to say there's two categories. He's going to talk about sin, but here it seems like he's not talking necessarily about sin, but just anything. It could be anything good, but that is just weighing you down. It might be interesting to think back of last year and think what kind of things slowed you down in your pursuit of Christ. What kind of things in your life made it difficult for you to follow Christ? Spiritually speaking, they kind of kept you on the couch. They kept you distracted. Spiritually speaking, they kept you just scrolling. Or spiritually speaking, they kept you just hitting the snooze button. Right? It could be, again, good things. Maybe your business or your dreams or your studies. Could be some hobby, some time waster, some place that you look for comfort, and too much comfort, too much rest. What have been those things for you in the past? They're not wrong. They're just not making it easy for you to follow Christ. And if you keep on, if you run the same way you did in 23, you're going to be sluggish this year. And you may be inspired. You may read Hebrews chapter 11. You may read your Bible and think, I want to follow Christ like never before this year. Well, you're not going to run faster. You're not going to run better if you're carrying the same weight into 23. But he also says, okay, so lay down the weight, that the things that weigh you down, but also you got to put away the sin that trips you up. The writer warns of the sin that the ESV says clings so closely, or the idea is surrounds you or entangles you. Right? So, of course, carrying a little extra weight makes it a little harder to run, but having your feet wrapped up makes it impossible to run. And I think that the emphasis here is that sin will make it impossible for you to run the race with Jesus this year. Why? Why would sin make it so difficult to run, even impossible? Because sin is the opposite of faith. Sin is the opposite of faith. So if faith is trusting in God, who he is and what he said, no matter what, sin at the core is doubting God. It's not going his way, it's going our own way. And so sin is fundamentally opposed to you running a good race. That's why he says it entangles you. It wraps up your feet. It makes it impossible. So if you decide this year that you're going to just try to go on wrapped up in that sin, committed to that sin, not dealing and repenting, turning from that sin, it would be like you're trying to take a shortcut and run through a briar patch or run through a kudzu embankment. You will not make it far. You will not run at all. You'll be tangled up and trapped. Christian, this is a great time, standing right here on the brink of a new year, to consider and to ask ourselves, what is the sin? Is there sin in my life? It's just going to hold me back another year. One more year, that bitterness that I can bring to church, I can hold on to at home, I can still go to my job, that bitterness will keep you from running with Christ. Is that bitterness going to trip you up another year? It's going to have a hold on you one more year. Or that lust, pornography, that immoral relationship, it's just going to be another year. You're not going to cut off sin. You're not going to drop it. It's just going to be one more year. It's going to define you. It's going to keep you from running with Christ, whatever that thing is. This would be the time to put off sin. And by God's grace and through the work of Jesus, that sin, if you know Jesus, that sin is chains that have been broken. That vine is broken, is withered. You can take it off. The sin, the power of sin has been defeated. You can run free in Jesus this year. What is that sin that so easily entangles us? You got to run free. You got to run light because the race is long. You need encouragement. You need freedom. Because number three, you need endurance. Look at the end of verse 1. He says, and let us run with endurance the race that is set before us. And so here again, our coach reminds us, you got to run with endurance. The Christian life is not a sprint. It is an endurance event. It's not a 100-meter dash. It's not even a 5K. It's a marathon. It is an ultra marathon. And so again, the writer calls us, you got to endure. Now, why is it so important? Why does he keep saying that? You've got to endure. You've got to endure. You've got to endure. Well, because the race is long. And two, we shouldn't be surprised. We shouldn't be undone when the race is tough. We need to constantly be reminded that, hey, we are an endurance, long distance event. So don't be surprised when it's hard. It's gonna be hard. It's going to be tough, right? So if you were to talk to most people at the start of a marathon, you might find people bouncing around with smiles on their face, some nervous energy. Now you'd find people that are off the start line, fresh, bouncing around. But talk to those same inspired, committed, even well-trained runners, mile 20, 21, 22, those same runners will be cursing themselves. What are you doing? Why did I sign up for this? Why did I pay for this? I invited this suffering into my life. I hate myself. If you've ever run a marathon, I'm speaking, you're like, you know, you've been there, you're hitting that wall. And the same thing is true in the marathon of the Christian life, that the race will be tough. Obedience will be hard. Perseverance is going to hurt at times. Friends, don't be surprised. Peter said this, don't be surprised when a fiery trial, difficult times come upon you when you follow Jesus in a world that is not following Jesus. Don't be surprised or disillusioned. Here's why it's so important, because sometimes when we hit rough patches, we think, I guess I'm just not cut out for this. Right? I guess I'm just not a runner. Boy, sure does seem easy for everybody else. I'm just not cut out for the Christian life. I guess I just don't know how to run very well. Friends, but that's not true. That's not true. The Christian life is a marathon. Marathons are difficult for everyone. It's tough for the world-class marathoner who's running a 2-hour and 30-minute race, and it's tough for the first-time marathoner who's trying to run 5 or 6 hours. It's hard for everybody. The Christian life will be tough. Don't be disillusioned. Don't throw in the towel. Don't slow down. Don't give up because it gets tough. We're told it's going to be tough. You need endurance, so don't drop out. Keep going. Don't fade. You need endurance because it's going to be tough. You also need endurance so you don't miss out. Because it's going to be worth it. Why would you keep going? If it's that hard, if it's that tough at times, why would you keep going? Why would you keep going when you're not feeling it at all? Why would you keep going when you're witnessing other people around you fading and dropping out? Isn't that discouraging to see other runners, maybe people that you respected, maybe pastors, authors, musicians, worship leaders, mentors, they fade. Why would you keep going? Boy, if better runners than you drop out, why would you keep going? Because it's going to be worth it. Because you're going to be glad that you didn't stop. Because there's too much at stake to quit. That's the emphasis of Hebrews chapter 10 through 12. Keep going. It's going to be tough, but you need endurance because it's going to be worth it. If you endure to the end, there is great reward. There is great reward. If you're in Hebrews chapter 12, just flip over a page maybe. Hebrews chapter 10. Or scroll up to Hebrews chapter 10, verse 35 and through 36. Again, talking to these same believers, he says, he's trying to say, hey, keep going, don't give up, endure. Why? He says, therefore, do not throw away your confidence, which has a great reward. For you have need of endurance, so that when you have done the will of God, you may receive what is promised. Don't stop. There is reward ahead for those who endure. It's not just the writer of Hebrews that talks like this. The whole New Testament talks like this. There is a reward for those who will endure to the end. James 1:12 says this, blessed is the man who remains steadfast, all right, who endures, the man or woman who endures under trial. For when he has stood the test, the uphill running, the scorching heat, when he has run through the wall, he will receive the crown of life which God has promised to those who love him. Paul says it this in first, like this in 1 Corinthians 9. Don't you know that in a race, all runners run, but only one receives the prize? So run that you may obtain it. Every athlete exercises self-control in all things. They do it to receive a perishable wreath, or a medal, we might say, or a certificate. But we do it for the imperishable reward, a reward that will never be taken away. So at that finish line of that marathon or that ultra marathon, the same people who were crying, hating themselves, and about to drop out, who were suffering so badly, who were grimacing, crossing that finish line. There's all smiles, all high fives, taking pictures, talking about when they're going to do it again. Why? Because there is a great reward. Right? The finish is the reward. How much more the reward for those who are running after Christ for joy that never fades, rewards that never fade, that never rust, that are never put in the top drawer and forgotten about. The reward of Christ. As I was running, actually literally running this week, a song came to my mind as I was meditating on this passage. An old song that says, "It will be worth it all when we see Jesus. Life's trials will seem so small when we see Christ. One look at his dear face, all sorrow will erase. So, bravely run the race till we see Christ." Friends, no matter what you're enduring right now, no matter how hard your story, no matter how deep the wounds, no matter how tired you are, no matter how good and easy the world seems to have it, no matter how badly you want to drop out and fade and put it in neutral, God promises that it will be worth it if you endure, if you keep going. So hear me cheering on you like I was cheering on my little runner. You're headed uphill. I think a great mantra for running is never stop on the hills. You give yourself permission. Now, I'll quit in 5 minutes, but not now. Right? Why? Because in that immediate crux of suffering, that's all you want to do. But if you can say, don't stop on the hills, you can stop in a minute. What happens when you get through that stretch? Oh, I'm so glad I didn't stop. You will say the same. If you don't stop on the hills of suffering and difficulty, if you don't stop for the pleasures and the comforts and the rest that the world offers, you will not regret it. It will be worth it all. Lastly, he says we need focus. We need to run with focus. Run with encouragement. Run in freedom. Run with endurance. And run with focus. Again, look at verse 2. Looking to Jesus, the founder and perfecter of our faith, who for the joy that was set before him endured the cross, despising the shame, and is seated at the right hand of the throne of God. Right, so he started this chapter by causing us to look up to the stadium filled with this sea of former runners whose lives testify to us. Right? And we should look up, we should look back in our Bibles and be encouraged by these runners who ran in faith. Friends, Hebrews 10 says we should also look around to fellow runners who are in the race with us right now. We're a running group. We encourage one another not to quit, to keep going. We should look back. We should look around. But ultimately, our focus must not be on others, not even the great saints of old, but our focus is to be on Jesus. If you're going to endure, it's going to be because your eyes are on Jesus, because you're looking past the difficulties. You're looking beyond the suffering. You're looking beyond the promised rest and comfort and pleasures of the world to Jesus. The idea here, this word look, is to gaze intently, right? To turn your attention off everything else and to gaze intently at Jesus. And the tense of the verb here is to continually, right? It's not just you made a decision one time to follow Christ, to look to Christ, and that's done. The idea is here, you're going to always have to be taking your focus off everything else and intentionally looking to Jesus constantly. Why? Because Jesus knows the way. Jesus knows the way. He's like the pacer who knows the pace, knows the course, and you got to follow him. He knows the way. We don't have time to explore all this passage, but we're told he knows the way because he's the founder. You see that? He's the founder of our faith. The word there is author or creator of the way. The idea is that Jesus knows the way. We follow him because Jesus blazed the trail. Right, Jesus removed every obstacle. A few weeks ago, several times this fall, we've been hiking. And almost every time hiking in the Smokies, I had this moment of thinking, who in the world took all the time to clear this trail, to blast rock, to cut out a trail in the side of this mountain, to lay a bridge? This is amazing. And who carved the roads? Even to get through Townsend, to get through Gatlinburg, amazing. No matter how hard my hike might be, nothing compared to blazing that trail. And same thing, when we look at Jesus, we see the one who has blazed the trail. He removed every obstacle that separated us from God. Right? He removed the obstacle of our sin that separated us from our Father. And so the recurring theme of Hebrews is, guys, don't turn back. Who else are you going to follow? Who else are you going to follow after? Right? There's only salvation in Jesus. So if you turn away from Jesus, you're turning away from salvation. There's not another course that you could run that will lead you to God the Father in salvation. Only Jesus. So if you turn back from him, you're turning away from salvation. He's the founder. He's the trailblazer. He's also the perfecter. Not only did he make the way, Jesus actually ran the course. He perfected the course. Jesus is a fellow runner. He's the first runner. He's the ultimate runner. He finished it. Nobody ran the race like Jesus. We've just come through the Gospel of Mark, and time again, we saw there's nobody like Jesus. I mean, the disciples have their moments. Mostly they have their moments. Not so great. We look in the Old Testament. Wow, people ran some great races. Nobody ran like Jesus. He ran the whole course, the toughest parts of the course. He summited the peak. He endured more than all of us put together would ever have to endure. He went all the way and never misstepped. Never misstepped. Jesus endured all the way to the cross. We follow Jesus because he knows the way. We also follow Jesus because he shows us the way. We're not just to observe Jesus. and observe his race and come in here and work through texts like the Gospel of Mark and just stand in awe of like what we should be. We should worship and glorify Jesus. But the writer of Hebrews says, you also have to run like Jesus. You should follow Jesus. We've sung here lately, we go the Jesus way. We don't only celebrate the Jesus way, we follow Jesus in the way that he has led. Jesus ran with endurance. Zach referred to this in his one of the song introductions in verse 3 and 4 in chapter 12. He wants to point us to Jesus when we're tempted to give up. He says, consider him who endured from sinners such hostility against himself so that you may not grow weary or faint-hearted in your struggle against sin. You have not yet resisted to the point of shedding your blood. He puts our suffering, he puts our difficulties in some perspective here. Right? When you look at Jesus, you say, oh, he suffered. He endured much more than I'll ever have to endure. He endured for my sake, for my sin. I can follow him. We keep our eyes on Jesus who endured. Jesus ran with endurance. Jesus also, last thing here, Jesus ran with endurance. But what we see is that Jesus also ran for joy. Did you catch this? Looking to Jesus, the founder and perfecter of our faith, verse 2, who for the joy that was set before him endured. Why did Jesus endure the cross? Only because it was his duty? He did it out of obedience. He submitted his will. He did his duty. But the writer of Hebrews says that he also did it for joy. You say, what joy is there in the cross? What joy is there in running that kind of course? What joy is there running that race? That is awful. Jesus saw joy. Jesus knew that there was joy on the other side of the course, at the finish line. Jesus knew that there was joy on the other side of the cross. What joy was Jesus running after? The joy of pleasing and obeying God. What joy is that? If you knew your life and your obedience would completely please and honor your Maker, your Father, God. Jesus experienced that joy as the Son of God. He had the joy of providing salvation. Jesus finished the race and sat down at the place of reward, the place of exaltation. There was joy, so Jesus endured. And God's people have always run for joy. The difficult race that all the runners in Hebrews 11 ran, they all ran for joy. Some of them realize some of that joy. Sometimes we realize that joy. We obey, we believe God, and we come through that trial, and we look back and we're able to testify to other people. God came through. And he gave me such joy to see that as I saw that he loves me, he provides for me. And you get the joy of sharing that testimony with others. You know, there's other people here, their race, their earthly race didn't end in joy. They weren't celebrated. They were, we're told, tortured, exiled. They suffered. They realized that there was joy beyond this world. They were looking for a joy beyond this world, on the other side that only God will give and that nothing will ever take away. That's why Paul says, so we don't lose heart. He's talking about endurance. He said, even when this outer person, this self is wearing away, wearing thin, the inner person is being renewed. How? Well, in one way, realizing that this light, momentary affliction and race that we run is preparing for us an eternal weight of glory beyond all comparison. So we run, not just seeing the things that are visible, but seeing beyond them to the rewards and the joy, the reward of Christ of pleasing and honoring God. We run for the joy that is set before us. Run with joy. Don't run. Don't just run the Christian life out of a sense of duty. That is not what it's about. Don't run because you just enjoy the pain, the suffering. Don't run for joy. Run for joy that God has promised. Bank on the promises of God and believe and run after that joy. So, church, how are you doing? You know, a running coach might tell you that in the middle of a race, in the middle of a long run, when you're feeling tired, when you're kind of thoughtless about your run, there needs to be a moment where you just self-assess. All right, what am I doing here? How am I running? All right, I'm in mile 15. My mind is wandering. Okay, I got to self-assess here. And this is a moment like this where we're just called to attention, like, okay, how am I running? I wasn't even thinking about it. How am I running? How are you doing? Let me ask you just a few questions to consider as you leave here. Consider this week. What's the race that God has called you to run? And I mean like presently, like what's the stretch ahead of you? Like what is the course right in front of you? Run the mile that you're in. What mile are you in? What does it look like? What has God called you to right now? Is there something? Be honest with yourself. Is there something that's just slowing you down? Maybe the people who know you best and love you most would say, yeah, that's really weighing you down. I love you, but that's slowing you down. Or maybe you know in your heart, you just know that all the talk of this race won't go very far until you just repent and turn from that sin, because you're going to be tangled up into it, and you're not just going to be able, you're just not going to go very far this year. We're going to have the same conversation next year. So what is that thing that God's called you? Just you drop it, repent, get some help, let somebody else come alongside you, encourage you. I promise you, whatever sin you're dealing with, we have dealt with it too. There's somebody who will come alongside you, encourage you, and help you through it. And then, are you motivated by joy to keep going? Confidence that in this pain and suffering, God is up to something good right now. Keep reading Hebrews chapter 12. It says God's even up to something good right now. He's working discipline. He's training you through what you're suffering right now. It's not for nothing, Christian. So hang in there. Don't stop. God is up to something. Are you enduring for joy? You're looking to the reward. Are you running in faith? Have you just gotten distracted? Maybe you're on the course and it's just you've stopped for a cup of coffee and you just never started running again. You say, I'm just kind of in neutral. Christian, if you're in neutral, you're headed backwards. You can't stay in neutral. The clock is running. The race is going on. You're getting left behind. Don't get back in the race wherever you're at. New Christian, older Christian, veteran runner. Let me just say to the veteran Christian runners, no runner slows down when he sees the finish line. Don't let up if you're on the back half of the race. Don't let up down the final home stretch. Finish strong. The other believers, the younger believers, the younger runners coming behind you, they need to see you finishing strong. Kicking it. Don't let up. So how are you running?